Welcome to Brave, Bold, Brilliant. Your host, Jeanette Linfoot, talks to incredible people about their experiences and unleashing their full potential. From the boardroom tables of big international business to the dining room tables of entrepreneurial startups, embracing opportunities, overcoming challenges, taking risks, while staying true to yourself is where the magic happens.
Hi, it's Jeanette here. If you're enjoying Brave, Bold, Brilliant, I'd love it if you'd subscribe, share with your friends, and leave a five-star review. Let's do it. Here's the show.
So welcome to the Brave, Bold, Brilliant podcast. I am your host, Jeanette Linfoot, and I'm here today with an incredible guest. Talk about a man with a big personality, a big smile. What he doesn't know about sales and marketing isn't worth knowing. It is the wonderful Shane Jameson, who is the Area Director of Sales and Marketing for the Intercontinental Hotels Group in Thailand. Welcome, Shane.
Well, thank you, Jeanette. That was such a welcome. And I hope now I'm not underwhelming because that was so huge. You've bigged that up a lot. So I just hope that people stay to the end. But thank you for having me. Amazing. Thank you.
Oh, no, it's great to have you, Shane. And you and I have actually known each other for a few years now.
That is true.
So we do go back a little bit, but I know that everyone listening is going to want to know a little bit more about your story, where life started. So let's kick off there, Shane, and then we're going to go on from there, if that's all right.
Thanks, Jeanette. I guess I was an Aussie boy with a dream. So grew up in Geelong, Victoria, originally from Perth, but we kind of glaze over that because everything kind of important happened after I moved to Victoria. And the accent's a little bit misplaced, so please, you know, listeners, don't hold that against me either. It's just from never living in Australia really for any serious length of time after I, you know, left my team. So basically started with a commerce degree. Fell out of that, thought that was a bit terrible. And well, actually, it wasn't terrible. I was terrible at it. And I was bored and I was like, oh. So I had one of these real ego moments and said, no, I need to be surrounded by people. I need people in my life. And what I really want to do is hospitality. I have to be in hospitality. So sort of as I was sort of tumbling out of that commerce degree, I sort of forward tumbled into hospitality. And that was my groove. That was my thing. And I did a Bachelor of Applied Science degree in Australia that took me to sort of me being a very average waiter in the Whitsundays, but really high levels of, you know, customer satisfaction. So that was kind of interesting, you know, in the PDPs and stuff. You know, you're a terrible waiter, but they love you. It's odd kind of balance. And then came back and did sort of a bit more of the degree and then went to Dubai. That was sort of 2004, where I got to Dubai and again in sort of conference and events, which was, you know, for anyone who I guess is starting out in hospitality, that's seriously hard work, you know, when you're talking about the big events, carrying plates and platters and all the rest of it. But I kind of love that because it's got a bit of spunk, and Dubai's got a bit of spunk, hasn't it? It's my first event, I think, was for the Belgian Beer Society out in the middle of the desert, so Bedouin tents and, you know, drunk Belgians everywhere. Nothing's obviously not uncommon, but, you know, it was kind of fabulous. And then I realized, like, oh my goodness, I have to do this. But before that, I have to meet a girl, you know, so I kind of had this like, yeah. So then I kind of like, I messaged my stepmother, who's Chinese, and I said, hey, you know, when are you going to hook me up with a foxy Chinese bird? And she sent me a message back, like, literally 10 minutes later. And this is well documented, so this is no BS, Jeanette. And she says, how about Friday? And I was like, well, super efficient. I'm like, not unlike the Chinese. And sure thing, this stunning woman, batting way above, you know, my average. I mean, you can't even imagine how beautiful my wife is. Well, you can actually, if you follow me on social, you'll be able to see her. But so she sort of like walks in, sort of baseball cap, sort of like kind of dressed. And I was like, oh my God, I'm like, if she lasts this date with me, like, I can't possibly let this woman go. Not like in a creepy kind of way. And we had this really almost 24-hour date. My father was chaperone. It was kind of weird. I was like 21. And it was kind of a bit awkward. But that kind of tumbled over. And I remember dropping her off at 4 a.m. And I said to the taxi driver at that point, I said, you know what? I'm going to marry that girl. And he said, thank you very much. Can you just pay me for the fare? Because I've dropped her and now I'm dropping you. So I'm true, you know, I guess we're getting almost 15 years later, two kids. And that was the romance that was. But she was also in hospitality. So it kind of all was swinging around the same things. So that was sort of 2004. I was a trainee. It was Jebel Ali Group in Dubai, David Thompson. You know, these are legacy legends, if you will, in the Dubai scene. So it was so great. And then I had to come back and finish the degree. So I thought I would do the sort of, you know, the very chivalrous thing. And I started a bit of Mandarin at university. It was a great sort of talk around the table. That was all BS because I was absolutely terrible at learning Mandarin at university. It's bloody hard, Jeanette. I'll be honest with you. All of this is not ready for that. But I tried, and I did have at that point the Chinese fiance. So I'm like, gosh, I've got to do something here. So I did, and I got a little bit better at it. I'm like, all right, into Asia, ended up back in the Middle East. So the Asia dream was there to start. I was ready for China. I was ready for Macau. I was ready for Hong Kong. None of that happened. That didn't happen. Instead, I went back to Jebel Ali. So this is sort of like circa number two as a salesperson and loved it, loved everything about it. I was your quintessential young, and we're sort of 21, 22, sales manager, you know, in Dubai, Internet Media City, carrying coffees for all the secretaries. I mean, I'm talking old school sales, you know, and I look around today and sales has changed somewhat over the years. And I'm not that old. I'm 38, as I think you said once, you know, I'm not young anymore, Shane. That was a Jeanette Lynn Foote quote. So I did that for a bit. Then I got into MICE and I kind of loved that. And I thought that was the best thing of my life, you know, dealing with groups and managing a bit of Congress for Jebel Ali. They sort of said to me, let's go into the leisure realm and let's see how you do in leisure sales, which is, of course, a couple of years later where I met you. And I think that sort of wholesale, that leisure segment, especially for Dubai, which is just so, so bold and crazy and crazy average rates. And I think, you know, it always made me laugh that when Mauritius came later, but in Mauritius, I had UK tour operators going, oh, it's way too expensive. I'm like, but hang on, in Dubai, you were paying four times the price for a lot less. So Dubai just had this carrot of gold. I mean, seriously, a golden carrot for me. And so I spent more time in Dubai. That was amazing. Dabbled as a DMC, wasn't great. That was another one of those hit and miss things. Then got very ambitious, which was both, I guess, personally endearing and then kind of a rubbish decision as well at the same time. And I moved to Qatar to take on my first DOSM position. And I was 27. So I had this in my head. 27 was a really pivotal year. It was kind of like where great rock stars die. I'm alive still, so that's that. I'm not the great rock star either. But, you know, like your Kurt Cobains and a few others that, you know, they're all going in sort of at that age. And I desperately wanted to be a director of sales and marketing. So I took a job in Qatar. That was bad news. That lasted 9 months. Was out of a job, complete, like fired. And I was like, oh, my God. Oh my God, what do I do? What do I do? This is terrible. And I do remember years later telling this story to my team and they're like, did you just tell us that you got fired? I'm like, being fired's okay. That's an okay thing. It's not I didn't take it personally. I hated Qatar, and no disrespect to anyone who loves Qatar, but I hated it. So from there, I went to Mauritius, which was incredible. So second DOSM position, 27, 28. And then eventually I remember waking up for my 30th birthday on a sales trip in London, you know, just seen Rock of Ages out on the Terps a bit and was living the DOSM luxury life with IHG, so Intercontinental Hotel Group. You know, that also brought me back to Dubai eventually. So we've sort of gone Qatar, Mauritius, back to Dubai in a really business hotel at Crown Plaza. That was interesting more from the standpoint that I'm pretty rubbish at business sales. So I'm not a very good corporate salesperson. That was sort of my junior years. And then I kind of went, oh, this is a little bit hard, isn't it? And that is true, by the way. So anyone in corporate sales, you work really hard. You know, full props to you. But then the big ticket came, I guess, or the big win came where we met each other. I did get a Facebook messenger from my very dear friend, Andy Nightingale, who you also know. And it was simply, would you take, hi, it's Andy. We didn't know each other, but hi, it's Andy over Facebook messenger, how all great jobs are given. Would you take a job at leisure sales at Madinat Jumeirah? And I way overcompensated there. I called him 100 times, harassed the poor guy. I'm like, yeah, do you want to see me? What can I do? And in the end, he was like, it's okay. We'll catch up, Shane. Don't worry. And then, long story short, got that job. Jumeirah sort of clustered its operations. I then got that job. So then I became the cluster director of sales for leisure for the Jumeirah sort of owned estate. So I was gone from sort of like back in the day, not being allowed into Burj Al Arab, a bit rock star, to having a pass that allowed me to drive into Burj Al Arab, which was always really just to be the heads of state. It was so amazing. And I loved it. And Jumeirah was like the most incredible thing. So yeah, I was doing that. And then one day I woke up after a fuse with Jumeirah and I said, wow, things are actually going really well. Things have never been better. There was no COVID. There was no world economic crisis. There was none of that. And I just didn't know if I was happy anymore, but it wasn't the job. It definitely wasn't the job because I think, you know, of all people, how close I am to the company still to this day. But it was me. I needed to do something different for me. IHG acquired Kimpton in 2015. And I remember sort of watching the press and I knew about Bill Kimpton. I knew what he stood for and equality and people and pets. We'll get to that, I guess. But, you know, and just really owning who you are, which is also something that you and I have spoken about a bit, like really knowing who I am and really... So there were so many things there, you know, obviously from an LGBT standpoint, Middle East has its challenges, which is, it's. I mean, I think that's well documented. I don't think that's a revelation, but obviously to sort of get an opportunity to come to Thailand. And again, it's not specifically LGBT, but it's people being allowed to be who they are and being respected for their choices. And that's a huge part of my belief system. And I just think still today, whether it's, you know, women in leadership or whether it's the LGBTQ+ community or whatever it might be, I still don't think we're there yet. And Kimpton was at least the first stand I took to open, you know, the first Kimpton hotel in Southeast Asia. Then COVID, bang, like just like that. So while it was going so great and it was all amazing, and we sort of remember I was in the States and they were like, oh, have you brought that, you know, Chinese disease with you? I'm like, a little bit rude, Chinese wife. But I kind of got back and well, anyway, 18 months later, here we are. But I'm extremely proud of what I've done with Kimpton. Sort of less than 12 months into that, or maybe right on 12 months into that, IHG offered me the position to be the area director of sales and marketing here in Thailand, which means I picked up sort of 10, 12 other hotels. And while I've got amazing commercial leaders on property, I'm there as a support network for them to you know, I don't want to say push them, but, you know, really just be their shoulder, if that makes sense. You know, and I think growing up, it was the shoulders that I had and the people I could lean on that actually got me to where I am, because sales is a bit of a lonely world, Jeanette. Like, it sounds super glamorous, and some of the positions that I've held have been more than glamorous, but there's also quite a lot of isolation there. We should use the word isolation. I think that was a word I said I wasn't going to use in 2021. But, you know, you do feel isolated from the world because everything's a number. And everything is you're very driven and it's very personal. And while it's teamwork, it's still very personal. It's still a very personal journey for you. So I don't know. That's me. I think that's everything. Was that quick? Did I go? I probably just filled it all out.
There's a lot in there. There's a lot in there, Shane. But no, brilliant. I mean, you've had an incredible career. And you know what absolutely love about you, Shane? Well, there's lots of things. But what I really love is your energy. And, you know, you have such enthusiasm. You throw yourself into something. You know, you really do give it your all. And that just absolutely shines through. Anyone listening can hear it in your voice. Anyone watching this can see it in your face. And that is such a great approach to have, I think, to life. But let me take you back, because we're going to dig into quite a lot of detail. So much that we're going to cover. Let's go back to those sort of childhood, really, and growing up in Australia and really where you got the travel bug from and the sense of adventure.
Sure.
Because you've lived in multiple places. You've thrown yourself into lots of different roles. You've been incredibly successful. You've been fired from jobs and bounce back. So you've got this great resilience and this passion for travel. Where did that come from? Does any of that link to childhood and kind of growing up in Australia or not?
No, definitely. I mean, look, Australia is, Australia really is, for me, the most wonderful adventure. And that can just simply be going to work because everything is distance driven. So it's very rare that, you know, I mean, I can come to, in Asia, within an hour's flight, you can hit five different countries, you know, or in Thailand, you can get to Phuket or Koh Samui. But generally speaking, within an hour, you can fly to many different places. In Australia, that's not really the case. I mean, you can change states, but Perth, for example, is sort of like 4 hours on the way back from Melbourne to Perth. And I've also driven the Nullarbor, which is a couple of times, actually. So that's, again, for most people probably in the UK, they'd be like, well, that's the most ridiculous thing you'll ever do, because it literally takes days. It's not something you can do in a 12-hour trip. And I guess for a lot of people, 12 hours in any direction is quite daunting. So the travel bug was always there. And I think visiting relatives across in different parts of Australia is, it's sunburned beauty. I mean, I can't really describe what it means. I mean, I haven't lived there for many, many years, but which is why I'm so passionate about it when I'm not there, because if I see heartbreaking things about my country, it breaks me even more because I'm not there to be a part of a solution. And that's not to talk about what's currently happening there. But, you know, haven't seen mum for going on 3 years now, my sisters, etc. But it really started with my grandmother. Her name was Eve, and may she rest in peace. And she was... It's a sad story, so I won't lower the tone too. Well, no, I will actually. I'll lower the tone. She was in a horrific car accident when I was about three, and my grandfather sadly was killed in that car accident. And I guess at that point there was sort of an assessment that she'd never walk again in some way. But I'm really happy to say that until the day she died, the woman used to walk maybe 5, 6, 7 kilometers a day. And I think that for me is. That's travel. Travel is, and it's there's probably synergies between what the world's going through now, being in a really terrible situation and so much heartache, and then recovering and walking all that distance. So I think it was about 1996, and she called me up, and I was quite a bratty, you know, teenager. And I think it was part to sort me out a bit. I've always been a bit lippy in that regard. Very, very, very conservatively lippy, but you know, I've got five sisters, right? So like at the end of the day, I have to, you know, sink or swim, isn't it? So she called me and she's like, you know, you got some places and China's an option. And at that point, I hadn't realized that you know, I actually had it in my DNA that I was probably going to end up with a woman from Asia. That hadn't triggered anything yet, because I was, you know, quite a chubby teenager who was in drama classes at school and tried to, you know, got out of things by working in the school canteen. Like, I was that kid. I was kind of that kid. So anyway, she's like, I can go to the UK. You know, we've got family in the Netherlands. Would you want to go there or China? And then America came up, and I'm like, oh, we have to go to Colombia. She's like, I'm not going to take you to Colombia, you know, 75-year-old grandmother and a chubby, you know, 15, 16-year-old kid. So in the end, we went to the UK, and I was like, England is everything. So for all those haters out there, you can stop listening, because I think England is as beautiful as the rose it's named for. The English countryside, trains, the system may not always be on time, you know, Pret-a-Manger, you know, I could Littlewoods and all of, I remember going around the UK going, oh my God, this is just, you know, Newcastle, like, blew my mind completely, and Norfolk, and so that was that. And then Holland obviously was completely different. And wow, you know, walking past sex museums with my grandmother, that for me, you know, Australians are quite conservative. So even for me, he's quite, I wouldn't say quite bold in that stance. I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. This country is amazing. Holland, love Holland, you know, the food and the chips and the mayonnaise and whatever else. So I sort of had that tiny taster, as well as a little bit of Malaysia, because we had layovers, and that was when layovers were still a big thing. So, you know, we had to stop and we had a night out and, you know, next day and whatever. And I was like, this was incredible. And it's all the opposite of Australia. Like, there is nothing the same. At all the same. The cuisines are all different. It's a sensory overload. I've got to be part of that. And even though I entered that commerce degree, that was a cop-out. That was me going, whatever, not interested. Got a decent score at school. Sure, whatever. What do you want to do? Yeah, bit of a commerce degree, accounting, marketing, something like that. And that's That's like the worst thing you can do. So with my boys, I always tell them, whatever you want, just grab it with both hands, right? Because, you know, I wasted a year of that. I could have been traveling more in that year. I could have done anything in that year. Instead, I had to capitalize on the following years, work a few jobs at once just to pay for my books. You know, a bit of a tragic divorce for the family in the end, but with mum and dad, but that's, you know, that makes you stronger. And then you sort of, but all of these things were footsteps, Jeanette, and building. But if you ask me, you know, where did it all start? It probably did start at somewhere like the Nullarbor Plain, when you get on a road and you really can't see the end. And that for me is both daunting, but my God, so exciting, you know, like, it's the most exciting thing to see the sun setting and the fiery red earth. And you go, wow. I mean, all those people that thought Australia was the first country in the world, it probably was. Like, it really probably is, because everything that happens there is so spiritual and ethereal. So, yeah, it probably started on one of those drives where we just seem to drive forever and never stop.
Fantastic. Wow. Gosh. So I want to talk a little bit more about Eve and the and the female influences in your life. So obviously you've been surrounded by amazing women.
Amazing.
And I know you're an incredible sort of advocate for, you know, diversity and inclusion in every sense. So that feminine energy of having your sisters and, you know, Eve, your amazing grandmother, etc. Yeah. How do you think that impacted you as an adult then, having been surrounded by all those wonderful women?
I look, and as controversial as it might sound, I think women are just so much better with reason. And I truly believe this. So this is not a sexist thing. And I'm sure there are men that reason well, and I'm sure they're there. I'm not one of them. But I'm sure they're there. But the women in my life, so, you know, Eve on my father's side, Violet on my mother's side. I mean, these women, I mean, if I speak to Violet there, I mean, she could just see lies and rubbish, like, and I would use other words to describe it if I wasn't talking to you, but the BS, she could just see it at 100 meters, she could see it. And she'd be like, no, just not having that. At 92, I'm not having that. Not having that, Shane. You know, baking sausage rolls, making a Victoria sponge, and she could just sniff it. So when I started, be like, oh, this comment sphere is not for me, that she's like, well, that's not true, is it? You're like, okay, so being called out by my grandmother, that's an awkward situation. Cut to my mother, who is by far the strongest woman, period. And ironically, we were Helen and I were watching the Aretha Franklin news story Respect last night, and Helen turned to me today and she's like, you know what, Aretha Franklin's your mother. I'm like, well, I don't know if that's exactly the analogy I'd go for. But what she meant was a woman who just didn't take any, basically, from anybody, and she just knew who she was. She wanted to do it her way. It was her way, all the highway. Loads of heartache in there, which, you know, my mother has also been through, and that's probably a different whole conversation, but that breaks my heart. And then I've got this matriarch of sisters. So it's not just a support network, it's reason, it's honesty, it's being able to... it's being able to have an elevated level of focus. And I genuinely believe, and there's incredible male leaders, that there is just no doubt. But if you see me on LinkedIn or if you see me on my social, I'm the happiest when I see women being put forward in strong leadership positions. Linda Lewis, Margaret Paul, women I've worked for, Doris Gribe, yourself. I mean, Jeanette, you know, I remember not being able to have a conversation with you. Like, I literally didn't know how to, because you would come around the corner with conversation that levels a crowd, but in such a polite way and with so much relativity. And I think, you know, I've just been lucky, I think, to have great women like that. Of course, my mother, my grandmothers on both sides, my sisters, they're fierce, very fierce, you know, and that's always great. And then, of course, my wife. I mean, the only woman that can bring me from sort of like all the way up in a furor about nothing to back down, she knows it too. Just with a look. There's nothing more. I don't have to say anything else. So, you know, and then in IHG, it's amazing. I've got, you know, the great Leanne Harwood, Karen Shepherd, Now I've got a great general manager in the new Sinterhorn Midtown project I'm working on. You know, all around me are strong women. And I mean, it's sad to say that there's ever a dawn where this should happen. I mean, it has been progressively happening. We're still not there yet. I don't think it's equal yet. And it may take maybe not even my lifetime, but let's just work on the inroads. But by being surrounded with that energy, I do think all great things come from within and from a woman at the end of the day, Mother Earth. It sort of all starts and finishes there, I guess. So that balance, that sort of reality check, and I've been surrounded by that my whole life. And I respond, you know, I really go after it. You know Linda very well, and you know what she meant for me, Alison as well, from Jamira. I mean, just wow, women and with such strength. I love that. I just love it. So I don't know if that's answered the question or made it not answered, but really it's inspiring when anybody wins. But I'm always more inspired at the moment, especially this day and age with different movements that are out there when women win. It makes me feel like the world's getting better.
Yeah. Oh, that's an incredible insight. And, you know, the world needs more men like you, Shane, that genuinely are strong advocates.
Give my number. No problem. I'll tell them all about it.
No, but it is. It's great to actually hear you speak in such a way, because it's not always the case, you know, and very often I was the only woman in the boardroom in the various roles I've done. And, you know, it can be tough, actually. So I think to build great teams like you have done as well, and really powerful teams with a real openness and approach to diversity at all levels is so important. It's so refreshing to hear. So no, I mean, massive chapeau to your sisters, grandmothers, mum, and all the wonderful women that you've had in your life.
And also, my wife.
And I'm coming to Helen.
Oh, Ying, she gets her own segment. She'll love that.
I'm coming to Helen, because clearly, you know, you've been together quite a long time. You met reasonably young, 24 hour date. That's incredible. I don't think I've ever been on a 24 hour date. Although
I don't think anybody could go on a 24 hour date with me tonight. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, she had to be a keeper. I mean, that was just, and when I say 24 hours, obviously we're not going into the debauchery of it all, but literally started morning one day, ended up at 4 a.m. the next day. Flowers, phone calls, blah, blah. I mean, it just went out, you know, it just went on, and it was, she's more than incredible. Yeah.
She sounds incredible. Was it love at first sight then, Shane, for you?
Oh God. I'm like, Shane, if you stuff this up, like, you hang up the boots, mate, like, you know, batch for life. This is not going to, you know, if you stuff this one up, it's not going to work. And it's not like I'd had a huge amount of relationships in the past. It wasn't that. What, that definitely wasn't the case. But I just remember the look she gave me, and I was just and because she's also, there's one thing about our cultural differences is that obviously, I mean, she's fluent in English, and she, you know, she teaches Mandarin and all the rest of it. She's an incredibly smart lady. But when English is not your first language, you do find truths easier, if that makes sense, because you don't have all of the fluff to hide behind when you're coming through those conversations. So it's a very straight, response. It's a very straight honesty. It's a beautiful honesty. Sometimes it's naivety because, you know, I guess when she grew up in China, and where she grew up in China was, I guess, a little bit, I mean, she's from far from the north of the mainland, but I guess for many years, China was not so international. It was international, but it wasn't like it is today. Let's not talk exactly today, but like these years, because obviously today it's a little bit difficult to close off the whole world. But I just think that when we sort of met, in the Middle East, and then, you know, I remember when I first met her, she was using, you know, translation devices to find different words and to try and different emotive words and stuff. Cut to today, you know, with a beer in her hand, watching the Aussie Rules football, crocheting on the couch like my mother. I mean, I married my mother. That happens. So I'm just giving you full warning that that's it. And so ironically, when she talked about Aretha Franklin equals my mother, I'm like, she also equals my wife in many ways, shapes, or form. Maybe without the range and but also the mother that she is. I mean, if you've got kids, we have a very clear line in our house, and sometimes it's come up, she's like, but I'm not working, and you're working. And I would say to her, hang on. Everything I earn is 50% your earnings, because you're raising the boys. You're raising the boys. You're there for them. You cook them. You're the food, the homework, the homeschooling. I mean, that's it's, and I know people don't always have that same approach, right? But at this part of her career, she's been completely selfless and allowed herself to look after our sons. And I, like, if there's no bigger gift in the world, it's that my sons don't have nannies and there's no prejudice towards that, no hired help. They literally have a mother's love every day. And I'm literally indebted for what she brings to our children. So yeah, she's a very special woman.
Yeah, no, she sounds incredible. And like you say, you know, it's teamwork. I think, you know, totally. whatever that looks like for different couples and families, you know, every person plays their really important part, don't they? So I think
absolutely.
And also when you have a big career and you have high pressured roles like you have, you know, having a strong support at home makes all the difference. I mean, I'm exactly the same with, you know, with Chris and I. We've both had our careers, but when I was progressing in my career, you know, there was no bigger fan than Chris to encourage me and support me and tell me that I can do this, you know, even then I had lots of doubts. And I think to have that person in your life is amazing. And Helen's clearly a very special lady. So big shout out to Helen.
Yeah. Props to her. She's a legend. And she can also just keep it very real. I'm a storyteller, but one small story. And for the listeners, we didn't go through any of this stuff. I'm going here with, as it's rolling, because Jeanette makes me feel so comfortable. I remember I was at a very interesting event at the Four Seasons, Jameer. I've never worked for Four Seasons, but because we had the Dubai International Film Festival, we sort of got tickets. There's always tickets everywhere. There's tickets for everything. I miss the tickets. I'll be honest with you. I miss going to different things. But so I was at the Four Seasons, and Anastasia was performing, and you know, one thing led to another. I'm on stage singing with Anastasia. This is no BS either. Widely documented. Eva Longoria, Melanie Griffith, Andy McDowell, my fan pit, and you know, there's people that might listen that can validate it. I remember coming home and trying to tell Helen at 2 a.m. I'm like, oh my goodness, and I said, she just went, it's 2 a.m. We're gonna talk about this tomorrow. And I'm like, yep, sure, okay, fine. You know, because it's 2 a.m. and she's got to get the kids ready for school. So why would I just see the point? So your rock also keeps you very steady in what's real. So I'll never forget that conversation. But what I did was subsequently go and open my goodie bag because I've never received a goodie bag or a favor bag from any event in my life. So this was the most amazing thing. So that was a moment.
Brilliant. Well, it's a nice segue, actually, Shane, because what I would like to talk, a couple of things I want to talk about. I want to talk about your outward confidence, right? Because anyone listening to this is going to hear you. You're on a roll, you're flying, you're full of energy, you've achieved all these incredible things. You've got a beautiful wife, amazing children, et cetera, et cetera. Life looks amazing, right? It looks amazing. Mm-hmm. And you're brimming with confidence. Mm-hmm. So it seems. Now, self-belief and mindset and having those moments where maybe you do have insecurities and doubts about things. Have you ever had those moments through your career where you've really had to dig deep and sort of go, no, come on, you can do this? Because someone outwardly watching or listening would probably think you would never have any of those feelings of insecurities or doubts.
Sure. That was just basically Anastasia's story. But no. Look, Jeanette, in all seriousness, sure. And you know it because I've had time with you professionally and even really recently. You know, it's really funny when you live on the brimming of energy spectrum as I do, and I don't know another way. I remember someone once called me, they're like, oh, you know, you're a diamond that needs loads of polishing. Kind of emphasizing the loads of polishing there. And that was a bit of a dark comment. But I sort of took that as to be like, you know, I just have to keep changing. I have to keep changing who I am. I have to keep changing. But actually what I've come to realize, and this is more, you know, I think even more so with my current arrangement, you know, my boss, Patrick, who I absolutely love and adore, my general manager, you know, it's basically play to people's strengths and he plays to mine. And we're very vocal and talk about that because I question myself, Jeanette. I mean, I question myself all the time. Someone says, oh, you sing amazing. Okay, thanks for that. And then I sort of like, yeah, but hang on, Shane, you know, in your career, and it's not a big illustrious career with, you know, number one albums, but I had bands and performed in front of people and, yeah, pitching moments. Last year I did a one-man, you know, Bruce Springsteen show where I, you know, told my life through Bruce Springsteen songs. You know, I guess someone lacking confidence is not choosing that as their avenue, but still to this day, and I'm getting much better because of you, I still kind of go, you know, it's not good enough. It's not going to be good enough. I think also with the career change that I made, you know, I was going in one direction and that was very lazy, to having to really dig deep and go into another one that I loved. And then again, you know, did I let myself down? Did I waste time? Have you, maybe my background, you know, I come from a family that kind of, one of those great stories where we had everything, then lost everything. So I know what it's like to sort of grow through that. I never wanted for anything, by the way. I had a great upbringing, so I don't want anyone to think this is a sorry story. It's not. But I, you know, public school boy, very good public school, and I wouldn't change that for a second. But I guess everything I wanted, everything I would project was probably not that. So when you come around and when you look at when you're going for jobs, and I mean, I remember, gosh, even applying for the cluster job at Jamira. So when Jamira was moving to a cluster arrangement for all of their hotels, we had to reapply for our jobs. I remember my heart literally in that meeting, and I feel sorry for Linda Lewis, Alex Lee, and Marika Spears, who were in that meeting with me. And when they asked me, you know, why I deserve that job, that's a very simple answer. I mean, if you've got the skill set, you own that space and you deliver it. And instead, I've literally, with tears streaming down my face, like I've never wanted anything more, like, you know, some Oscar, you know, acceptance speech. And it wasn't drama, real tears, like not just crocodile tears. And I think they were all maybe at that point too scared that she gave them the job, because I thought I was going to have a breakdown right in front of them. But I'm a very emotional person. So I think, you know, every time I question myself, and, you know, when you asked me to join the clubhouse, you know, I guess it was more than six months ago, I was looking, you know, John, yourself, obviously, Dan, legacy, people who have been in the industry, Mal, you know, I look at this and I go, oh my God, these were people who still I look up to these people. And you know, Shane Jameson, and sort of you called me out there and said, well, hang on, I asked you to be on it. So if I didn't want you to be on it, you wouldn't be on it. And that's a Jeanette Linfoot creed, you know, like you ask what you want, you know, like that. And I think, you know, so I always second guess, and I'm trying to get better at it. And I think, you know, probably because in my heart, I just want to be the very best I can be. And I want to prove myself, whether they're different goals that you set. So when I'm singing a song, you know, 100 people can say it sounds amazing, and I'm like, this was bloody terrible. Are they just being nice? Can they hear? Are they qualified to make that call? You know, and then I'm going through all of that, and it's like, what's all this in my head? At the end, performing for people is an amazing thing because you make people happy, and I sing, and I do all of that to make people happy. It's a little bit self-indulgent. I mean, you know, I kind of feel great doing it. It makes me feel happy, but the real purpose is to tell a story through song and through music. And, you know, I guess, and Patrick, my boss today, just to sort of come back to him, he'll say things to me like, gosh, Shane, I wish I could write the way you write. And I'm looking at Patrick. Patrick's like 6'2", looks like Ken, huge chest, tiny. I mean, he's literally the most stunning looking man you've ever seen in your life. And he says to me, I wish I could write like you. And I'm like, huh, that's a really nice thing. I'm kind of looking for, and I'm looking for something else. There's nothing else. He's simply saying, as a German native, and his wife is English, he said, the way you write, Shane, your flow, and the way you get a message across. Now, I don't think I'm that great, but maybe I can write. Maybe I am. It is something I can do. But that, it's so flattering that it almost makes me doubt myself if that's an answer. So I think, while I'm really working on it, and even, you know, when you said come onto the podcast, I was like, she's really joking. Because I put you in such high esteem. But now what I'm trying to do is balance these things and say, hey, maybe my story or maybe my sort of career can help someone else starting out today. It's different times, definitely different places. But hopefully there's people out there who want to go in the direction or or at least deviate into the direction I've gone into. I don't particularly want to be a general manager, so I love commercial leadership. That's kind of my pocket. I'm not really the GM guy. It's all a bit much, really. I'd rather just like spend everyone else's money and kind of go down that road and, you know, take you to fantastic dinners and do events for Sam Smith and Mariah Carey and all those fabulous things that I've done in my life, as opposed to just being a GM and making, you know, I don't want to do that. So yeah, if that answers your question, sure. Self-doubt, it's there. But my only advice would be that you've really got to work on it because it will consume you otherwise. And I had a wake-up call from you earlier this year, and it was on that. And from that exact day, I dug my heels in, I stood behind myself, I backed myself, I bought a house, which I'm very proud of. And they might be going, well, you know, it's nearly 40, bought a house, big deal. It's a huge deal for me. It's very big for very personal reasons, but it's a big deal for me. And that was because of you, Jeanette. So I think if I can pay that forward in any way and give someone else confidence in themselves, then I'm winning. And that was a gift that came from you.
Oh, well, honestly, Shane, it's great to speak so candidly about this because, you know, I think so often people do have these niggles and self-doubt and imposter syndrome. And, you know, it's talked about a lot, but it's not necessarily articulated in such an honest and open way as you've just done. So really, no, seriously, but seriously, thank you for that, because the point is that, you know, you are good enough. You were always good enough. And you're more than good enough, and you will continue to go on. The best is yet to come, you know, and I genuinely believe that. But I think you're right. You know, one of the things you said is you have to constantly work at it. And and I'm the same. You know, I've suffered with imposter syndrome, gosh, for probably most of my life. But you get to learn, recognize when it's happening, don't you? And actually
you do. Yeah.
Stop here. Hang on a minute. And yep. And the definition, if there is a definition of imposter syndrome, is that, you know, despite all the evidence of success that's plainly there to see, you put it all down to just a fluke, good luck or something, rather than actually it being a result of your skill, capability, experience or whatever. And what Absolutely. You just articulated is exactly that. So, you know, I think for anyone listening, you know, if you have those feelings of insecurity, self-doubt, etc., you can continue to work on yourself and achieve amazing things as you have done.
Thank you. Yeah. No, and I'm really proud. I'm prouder. I can now say things like I'm really proud. You know, I told her, my IHG boss, Mark Ryan, the other day, I said, you know, Mark, I know it's been rocky with COVID and everything, but I've actually never been, and of course, coming off the back of that huge Jumeirah, you know, incredible life I was living. But I did say to him, I've never been prouder than I am now of what we're achieving, the hotels we're signing. It's moving fast. It's deep as well. I mean, dealing in Asia is so different to the Middle East. I have been part of that. The signing of the signing of the Kimpton Kitalei Coast Samui. I did do the site inspection with the owners. That was me that did that site inspection. So I'm not taking, of course, but never take whole responsibility, nowhere near it. But I do take some responsibility of at least fulfilling my obligation as a commercial leader and delivering that site inspection that eventually went to the opening of that hotel or the eventual opening of that hotel. So I am very proud. I'm very proud of these achievements, but it's taken me, I'm 38, turning 39 this year. It's taken me all of those years to be able to say I'm proud. I'm proud of other people without even thinking about it. My mother, my wife, my kids. And I think it's very easy to be proud of other people. That's almost second nature. And if you're not, you're kind of a bad person. But to be proud of yourself, that's a skill. That's a real skill. And you've taught me, and I'm definitely by all means not conceited at all, but I am proud of the achievements I've had for what I've done and where I've come from.
Yeah, rightly so. So what I want to, I'm just kind of, we could talk for hours, you and I,
yeah. Volume one and volume two.
Yeah, yeah, well, we might have to have a repeat performance. In fact, I think we should have a follow-up repeat performance.
Any time.
Fantastic.
In person, yes.
Absolutely, over a very large bottle of wine, I think, or something cold and
fizzy. I get very emotional with that much wine. It'll be a completely different podcast. You'll be segueing into a whole new genre. Definitely be bold.
So watch this space, listeners, because that will be coming down the track. But the Mark II version. But listen, Shane, let's just come to a couple of sort of I suppose slightly more serious topics around business, right?
Sure.
Because you've got big responsibility, you know, as you say, you know, sales and marketing, a lot of pressure. You've got to deliver the numbers. You know, every role you've had really probably very stretching targets.
Sure.
And you're on the hook for all of that. So it isn't it isn't all the glamour, is it? It can be tough.
No.
And in particular, you know, the last 12 to 18 months, you know, dealing with running very large departments as you have done and going through all that change and uncertainty and disruption to the business. Yep. What have you had to really dig deep in terms of your skills as a leader to be able to navigate through the global pandemic that we've been through?
Sure. I mean, great question, obviously, and super relevant. I mean, I think in the last 18 months, if and there's been so many challenges. I mean, I opened the first Kimpton in Southeast Asia with my incredible team and the rest of the hotel operations in the middle, like October 2020. So, I mean, there's probably not a harder time. Now we're kind of, are we getting on the back of it? Not sure. But, you know, you see all these great things, you know, hotels opening, Peninsula London opening, and my gorgeous friend Sue Wheatley out there. And I see all these amazing things. And then I'm like, we still can't get a flight into the country. Do you know what I mean? So it was extremely hard. Things that I've done or things that I've learned to do, listen. I think someone said to me once, you've got two of these and one of these. So, you know, do this twice as much as this. I'm a talker, you know, Arabic, that's al-kawate, this, like the storyteller. That's my approach. It's always been my work. It's warm. It makes people feel good. It makes me feel good. But now just listen and work on my EQ with the teams. Not everybody is at the same level. Not everybody comes from the same background. I mean, here in Thailand, I've got a very fierce all-female team, and they're extraordinary. Like, the resilience that these girls just adds more to what I said before. But honesty, you know, you have to go through it together. There is no place today for fabrication. You have to really call it how it is. And obviously here in Asia, in a more of a polite way, but there's no point selling stories. You've really got to, I mean, if it's bad, it's going to be bad. And you've got to, you know, we've seen incredible hotels here in Bangkok close, you know, which I will not get into. It's not relevant to my story. But my point is, we've had to constantly reinvent the way this Kimpton opened. It was at the opening I wanted. From an energy perspective, absolutely. Everybody was just so excited. But I haven't even had... Since the opening, the teams from IHG outside, or Intercontinental Hotel Group, but our Singapore leaders, have not even seen it. The people that worked on the project to bring it to life, comms and brand and, excuse me, the operations, they haven't even smelled what it feels like in our lobby, Jeanette. So I'm consistently heartbroken at that, but there's no time for that. That will come, and we will travel again, and people will see it. But I've just had to be there as a listening post to the team to understand, to be very honest and transparent. And I think that's it. The learn to pivot, you know, look, consider all ideas. And I talk, you know, even on our clubhouse, I talk about pivoting so much, and especially in a food and beverage space, which is, I mean, I'm glad you can see my sort of chest and face, but, you know, I like to eat, I like a good meal. So food actually in Thailand, I have a saying that I've sort of trademarked, but there is one thing that connects the high so and sort of the low so, if you will, in Thailand, sort of from the Rolls Royce to the no shoes, that's food. So you can go to a street market and see exactly the same consumer up here and down here come together. So food is something where everybody connects it throughout the classes. It's how I feel in Thailand. And believe me, I'm definitely not up here, but fortunately, I'm also not on the lower end of that. So it was pivoting in food and beverage. It was being really honest, having incredible teams around you. That was for Kimpton. For the other hotels, once I took them on, again, heartbreaking stories, people on you know, less than 50% salary, less than 30% salary. It does work a little bit different to what it does in maybe Europe or in Australia or whatever. And I won't get into union or anything like that, but it is a little bit different. That wasn't the situation with my hotel, fortunately, but it really, it's eye-opening. You know, people got to make a living. And I think whenever you have a crisis like this, whether it would have been a terrorist attack or SARS or MERS or global financial crisis, you know, people are extremely emotional. So another thing I've learned to do is forgive. And I think forgiving is one of the hardest things to do, because you're kind of like, well, no, but don't need to. But you do. You really do. You have to forgive people for being late. You have to forgive people for being in a bad mood. You don't know their story. You don't know that their grandmother just passed away from COVID. Sorry, just give me a second, but the heartbreaking stories every day here. I mean, Thailand is an extraordinary country. Like, but I just think a lot of people see Phuket and, you know, that Koh Samui and these idyllic beaches that you'll never see again. But I can tell you with 100% certainty, it's a lot deeper than that. It's a country that's enriched in culture, politeness. It's very abstract in many ways. It's religious. And in many ways, it's almost more of that than I had in the Middle East, which is obviously known for those points. But I think, and it's definitely not been like that, so I don't want any of my, you know, my friends listening that I think Dubai was click the fingers and it came back to life. Absolutely not. The hard work and the effort that city went to come back, but it did rebound faster than just about anything I've ever seen. COVID, no COVID, variants, whatever, bang, straight back with the occupancy, straight back with the average rate. The Russians came in, everyone, boom, 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 boom. It, you know, but Thailand can't work like that. It's a monarchy as well. It doesn't work the same way. So rules are very different. And I think, you know, I've just had to learn to listen and really, and it is both empathy and sympathy, because and no one asks for a chip. No one has a chip on the shoulder here. They don't come into the office like that. In fact, it's just more what people don't say. So it's been sorry for that little emotional minute, but that has happened to my team. I've had, like most people, some, you know, this girl's grandmother died, five other people in the family then get COVID. They were a bit worried about a vaccine or whatever. So I just broke my heart for my staff. It just broke my heart for them. You know, but you've just got to keep going. You've got to be the rock for your family, for your team member, for the hotel. I mean, it's a 300 team member hotel. There's about 11 of us, 10 of us who are non-Thai. Everyone else is Thai. So I don't know what that looks like. I can only be part of what I'm allowed to be part of, as in what I'm led into. So earning the trust of the team, to be able to speak freely, to be able to. And they do. They allow me to be me. I'm still obviously maybe a little bit different to what I was in the Middle East, especially through these times, because, you know, quite a gregarious personality before. You know, you can be a bit more boisterous that way, but we laugh every day. I don't always understand the jokes. I don't always understand what's happening. There's a lot of conversation that takes place where I mean, it was funny. They all came into the day with electric lunch boxes. And I was like, sorry, what is all of it? What are we doing? And they're like, well, just plug it in, boil an egg in that. So I was like, so I come home and told Helen, and she's like, yeah, we had that in China years ago. And I'm like, no, it's not really the point. I'm just trying to understand where this, but not just one, everybody got one. And then the next thing, and then I've got FOMO in life. Like I fear of missing out on everything. So I'm like, what do I need to have this lunchbox as well, Jeanette? Do I need to boil an egg at my desk? Or do I need to keep my food hot? The answer was no. But then they came in with these gigantic water bottles, bright colors, pink, blue, everything. And I was like, they're huge. One of them is nearly as big as one of my team members. They're between 2.5 and 4 litres sort of things. I'm very pleased to say I now have one on my desk, because I've got that fear of missing out. I was so proud to carry it around. That makes you feel like I'm part of it. So I guess the last point I would say is have the ability to laugh at yourself and be part of your team. Don't isolate yourself from the team. That's not a cool leadership quality, I wouldn't have said. You've got to be part of it. And I love those girls. I mean, we don't always get along, that's for sure. I'm sure they would have a very different talk with you about me sometimes. But I absolutely love them, and I'm vested in their growth, in their where they go next, And that's an important question to ask any recruitment. So I would say, yeah, maybe the last point of that is, while all this is happening and while things are crumbling around you, there is not just your future. You're responsible for a group of people there and their future. So if you're not considering them while you're considering yourself as well, then you're only really doing half the job. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. Thank you so much, Shane. There's so much brilliant advice in there. And what I love is about how culturally sensitive you are to all of the different parts of the world.
I really tried to be, yes.
And I'm very glad you've got the 4-litre pink bottle for your desk
and
now.
It is. I'm going to send you a photo. It absolutely, you can put it next to my headshot. It's huge. And I drank it all today and had about 18 toilet breaks. So we're all good.
Well, I'm really glad you shared that detail with this show.
With everyone,
If anyone's wanting to know, Shane has a very active bladder. Excellent.
Active. Good kidneys for a man of my size. Exactly.
Fantastic. So I'm going to come to a couple of final questions, Shane, if I may.
Sure.
So as you think about your life, your career, your personal life, business life so far, can you think of the best piece of advice that you've ever been given?
Sure. I mean, we may have already gone through it, but the best piece of advice I can give anybody is trust yourself. Trust you're never wrong. Like, whatever the outcome, it's not wrong. So take a job and it turned out bad. That wasn't wrong. There was experience involved. There was learnings to be had. There might have been some difficult moments, or, you know, if you fall in love with someone, and go for it. You know, blindly, don't, you know, I swear by the, I wear my heart on my sleeve, Jeanette. I can't, and look, it doesn't always be great as an outcome. It's not always a fantastic opportunity at the end of it, but at least I can say I was honest and truthful, and I trusted that point. So while I've said that I've got an element of self-doubt and that's sort of lingering and that does linger there, you've got to trust yourself and your instincts. If it doesn't feel right, it's not. And it may, and I guess, you know, I'm not a stocks guy, right? Because I'm not into these numbers and Bitcoins and all that. Poor forever, no worries. But I see people get so upset because I should have bet money and I should have put the money on that. But you didn't. And so own that then. So own that point. So whatever the decision you make, as long as you own it, I feel it's the right decision. So, and that's going to be comfortable sometimes. It's going to be uncomfortable sometimes, but that's the best advice I can give anyone. You know, own the decision you make and believe in yourself. And that probably sounds very Disney, and I'm sure there's a soundtrack for that as well. But you know what? Disney's not half bad if that's what they're preaching to children these days.
Great stuff. And Shane, can you think of any advice that you've been given that wasn't so good for you, that didn't work out so well, that you wish you'd maybe ignored or not taken?
Advice? I trust everybody. Yeah, so I sometimes people tend to give you pearls of wisdom. I call these unwanted pearls of wisdom. Always prominent when you're having a baby and someone will tell you, you need to buy that pram, those nappies, don't do that. You can't, oh my God, you're going to wash the nappies? You can't be doing that. You have to have that cast. And I'm just like, so that applies to business life almost every day. Someone's going to tell you something or give you feedback on someone. And sometimes I've listened to it, i.e. that person is X, or that, be careful of that, da, 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 da. That goes completely against my heart on sleeve approach and trust. Now, I've trusted people who've been burnt. Everybody has. That shouldn't be a revelation. But I do go to sleep every night knowing that I did trust them and they broke my trust. So, and that's not every person, obviously, that's the example. But so, yeah, sometimes I wish I'd just not listened to that because it's muddled my viewpoint on making a decision, maybe a candidate in an interview, and that's not fair. I hate, I'm controversial, I hate the idea of references because as impartial as people are, they're not. But I just don't think people are. So, you know, it's kind of like, so when I do give references, I mean, if they really want a reference, that's fine. But I'll be like, you've got the CV, you've got it. So you can call any number of those people, no problem. I'd rather give personal references about myself to people who know me, not because they're going to give a better spin, but they're also hopefully going to talk about some of my faults as well, because I trust them enough. So if I ask Linda, who is both a personal friend and one of the greatest people I've ever worked for, I think she would give quite a candid approach about my, you know, use a lot. And I think she said that on many occasions, Shane's a lot, you know, and I am a lot. That's not a lie. So if you're wanting a meek, that's not who I am anyway. So I just guess that sometimes when you listen to so many stories about, oh my God, did you hear she did that? And then the last she did that, but you don't know the circumstances. We don't know why someone does what they do. We're not living that life with them. It's, you know, as much as I love parallel worlds, we're not in that scene. Like your career as well. Like, you know, when you moved to Saga Group and things like that, like that was very different from what you were doing before that. And subsequently almost the opposite to what is the opposite to what you're doing now in a way. But what doesn't change is Jeanette Linfoot, if that makes sense. The career has taken some changes, but the woman is the strong woman leadership, absolute mentor for people. So that's why I guess, you know, if you're part of a business and it goes bad, oh, they didn't help the business, but that's not actually true. So yeah, what advice has been given to me in the past, Jeanette, is sometimes people really want to give you too much information about someone. I like to look at everything with a blank sheet of paper. I think I'm a good judge of character, but because I project that transparency, I can also tell very clearly if it's not going to come back to me. So in which case, then it probably doesn't gel. So I kind of auto-correct. Sometimes I've made bad hires. Oh, well, shit happens. Move on, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. Yeah, so you know, you're right, I agree. Listen to all the great advice that people can give you or opinions, but ultimately make your own choice that's down to you, that you're happy with and can stand by. I 100% agree with that, Shane. So I have got one final question for you, if I may.
All right. Okay. Gosh, this is an ominous one. We're right at the end. So I'm the last podcast I did, someone wanted to sing, and I'm not there today, I'll be honest with you. So I hope we're not going in that direction. But yes, please. An interlude, by the way.
We will have a musical version when we have our second follow-up podcast with a bottle of wine.
Sure, anything you want, no problem.
Brilliant. But yeah, the podcast is called Brave, Bold, Brilliant, as we know. So yes. I'm really interested, Shane, what does that mean to you?
Well, if that's not if that's not an affirmation, then I'm not really sure what is. I mean, you can apply that to just about everything, but I would take it very literally and very personally. I mean, you've put together these three words to that for a reason. The brave is almost everything that I want to be, that lion that I don't know why, so I don't want to wait for lion. It's probably more of a hippo, but like, you know, that lion that I present and that magnanimous, you know, but I've got to be brave enough to own that as well. So for me personally, it's really strong. The bold, probably go there. Bold is just not being afraid to fly. You know, not being afraid to take a chance. Like the decision you made to leave and the big tour operators, I mean, and you were behind the biggest of tour operators. Let me say, so when I had trouble speaking with you in meetings and stuff at the very beginning, I became really good friends after that, but at the very beginning, and I'll never forget the dress, the shoes, everything, WTM, the proper meeting. My whole point is, you stepped away from all of that and into what you're doing now, which is helping other people with your mentoring and your life coaching, your advice. You run a gazillion clubhouses, plus you've got real estate literally all across the UK. That's not bold to completely. It would be like me stopping today and going, I'm going to go back to my love of musical theatre and I'm going to make it work. So long as I'm ready to own that. And own all that comes with that, which is a lot, by the way, a lot. I'm not very good at choosing stage makeup, I'll be honest with you, it's a different podcast. But if you don't have that bold part about it, you can't do that, so own it. So there's the brave and there's the bold, and the two of them are kind of synergetic in a way. They kind of go together. The brilliant part, of course, is what you are, but I think that we all have brilliance. You know, we all, if you're not having it, then something's not right. So fix that, change it. You know, don't keep doing the same thing. If it's not brilliant for you, if your meal's not brilliant, don't eat it. You know, if your job's not brilliant, don't do it. Change it, flip it, do something else. Take a break, take a sabbatical. Sometimes I wish I'd had a break. I think, you know, different jobs I've had, and my CV is not like this, not like the Mickey Mouse song. But, you know, usually what happens with a good director of sales and marketing, and I will say that I feel I'm a good director of sales and marketing, is that you usually don't get a lot of break. You're sort of going from one to the other because your last employer, you don't have bad relations and you want to finish well with them. And then your next employer is like, well, we need you now. And you're like, well, that's going to be 2 months notice period. So unfortunately, I've never had one of these, oh, well, you take garden leave for 3 months. That's never happened to me. I hear that. I've heard of garden leave. Well, that sounds amazing. Never had that happen to me. So I guess for me, the brave is the strength to own it. The bold is really stand behind your decisions and own it at the same time. And being brilliant, well, you know, Jeanette, if it's not, change it. That's how I see those three words.
Oh, fantastic. Well, that is the perfect way to end the podcast, Shane. So thank you so much, honestly. No,
thank you. Thank you so much. I'm extremely humbled and I'm very proud.
Oh, as you should be. And we will be doing round two over a bottle of wine and
yes.
with a musical interlude from yourself.
A full-on show. Don't worry. I can put music to anything. Don't worry about that.
Fantastic. Oh, well, thank you so much, Shane. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jeanette, very much. Take care. See you soon. Thank you.
Thanks. I really hope you've enjoyed Brave, Bold, Brilliant. Don't forget to subscribe and share with all your friends. And if you've enjoyed listening, I'd love it if you'd leave me a 5-star review.